Don't worry, that's not a scourge of mosquitoes you're hearing. That's just the sound of mosquito fogging. Pest control teams firing thick white clouds of insecticide up trash chutes and down drains. In Singapore's more residential areas, fumigation like this has become one of the most routine, prosaic forms of pest control employed by the tiny city-state. In reality, it's but one part in a well-established, multi-pronged approach to tackling the dreaded mosquito. Here, they take mosquito control very seriously. Singapore's government is dominated by one-party rule, often described as running a type of benevolent dictatorship. Put simply, this means it's much easier to pass sweeping regulations and then enforce them.
If you have residents that are non-compliant, you can actually apply the law and say, well, you know, and now you pay a penalty for not taking care of your premises and making sure that mosquitoes don't breed.
That was Professor Eng-Yong Ui, the Deputy Director of the Emerging Infectious Diseases Program at Singapore's prestigious National University. Since the late 1960s, when dengue overtook malaria as the most common cause of mosquito-borne disease in children, Singapore initiated, evolved, and fine-tuned programs to tackle it head-on. A half-century later, their success has been undeniable.
To give you an example, only about 20% of our population aged around 20 years old have had a prior dengue infection. If you go to Bangkok, you go to any other Southeast Asian cities, then that number is probably nearer 80, 90%.
So the country and the region were in for a shock when Southeast Asia's first case of locally transmitted Zika was discovered in late August in the Aljunied Crescent neighborhood of Singapore. For Professor Ui, the outbreak may be in part down to the country's prominent and exposed role as a major player in a globalized world.
Singapore is a hub of finance, of trade and all that in Southeast Asia. Probably human traffic is a lot higher.
Indeed, while its heady days as a lucrative colonial trading post may be long gone, the port of Singapore is today the world's second busiest after only Shanghai. Their main airport is the sixth busiest in the world with regards to international passengers, almost 55 million passing through in 2015 alone. Within days of spotting the first case, the Aljunied Crescent Sims Drive area of Singapore was declared a Zika cluster. Three other areas soon followed suit, and within a month, over 400 cases of Zika were recorded in this island nation, one quarter the size of Rhode Island. For Miss Lee, a local retiree who congregates almost every day outside a Sims Drive salon to talk with friends, it was hard to miss that something was up in their neighbourhood.
So many people, itchy, and then fever like that.
Yet Miss Lee is resolute in saying she never herself harboured any fear for the new epidemic, to which one of her friends helpfully steps in to explain.
No baby, no scat. Oh.
Just around the corner from Miss Lee, Irene kept her bakery business going during the outbreak. Zika may not have scared Miss Lee, but according to Irene, it frightened off the majority of the regular shoppers.
Those people, they are not willing to come out. They rather stay at home to avoid Zika to attack them, but now it's so empty.
Yet while the initial days were dreaded and the potential reach of the disease unknown, Irene says the swift response of the government agencies was comforting and inspiring.
They give leaflets, pamphlets, you know, over the show, TV, whatever. They don't only write it in letters, but they do it in pictures too, so that the elderly can be able to, you know, just look at the picture and understand that what they are supposed to do. So the government really did their part. So we as a citizen, we prevent ourselves from Zika to attack. We have to do our part also.
According to Professor Ui, this is the core of Singapore's approach: to have both government institutions and the citizens themselves taking proactive steps towards containment, surveillance, and control. In this instance, you had volunteers on the ground within days of the outbreak, handing out both leaflets explaining Zika in four languages and ample supplies of mosquito repellent. You see, Singapore is very much a carrot-and-stick type of country. While some citizens adhere to government recommendations out of a sense of civic duty, others comply under a threat of punitive measures. But however the means, the result is an active and well-informed citizenry. And that's something Professor Ui says other countries could benefit from.
The other thing that needs to go hand in hand with this government-based top-down kind of control is community engagement. Because without that, you know, you can check the premise for one day. But if you don't change the habit, then the next day when your vector control officer goes elsewhere, then the receptacles come back and they start breeding again. And so then this cycle goes on and on.
Incredibly, in early October, just over a month after that first Zika case had resulted in cases ballooning to 293, the cluster was proclaimed under control, and 2 weeks later, it was declared closed. The World Health Organization called Singapore a role model in its handling of Zika. But for all of Singapore's success, replicating their model may not be all that easy, says Professor Ui.
Singapore is probably under no illusion that what is done by us can be done by most other countries with dengue or Zika. Because it is expensive, it takes a big commitment from both the government and the public to have such programs in place.
But it's important to remember that based off GDP per capita, Singapore is the third richest country in the world. Their economy dwarfs that of their neighbours, being three times that of Malaysia's, five times Thailand's, and 12 that of Vietnam's.
We spend an estimated $60 million a year, US dollars, $60 million a year just to control one mosquito and, you know, to prevent the disease spread by this mosquito.
But unlike other wealthy nations like the US or the UK, Singapore typically hasn't chosen to be a major funder of global health initiatives. Its health dollars have stayed, for the most part, onshore. But where they have contributed is with the vital information that gets funneled through to the World Health Organization. Together with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, regular meetings have helped to create an open atmosphere of disease admission and information sharing that hasn't always existed.
You know, you just have to go, 13 years back in the SARS outbreak, nobody knew about it when it really happened until it went global. Then people say, wow, okay, we have a problem on our hands. You know, with each event, the response is like the whole world is trying to learn and how to cope with these emerging infections. So they're learning as they move along.
For Singapore, they'll be hoping something of their strategy tackling Zika can help their neighbours. For while they may be successful containing Zika, in today's interconnected, travel-heavy world, even island nations understand that they're never truly isolated.
For America Abroad, this is Adam Ramsey from Singapore.